Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you. Our team of JBD coaches support men and women to engage in divorce with more calm, clarity, and confidence through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources.
With our left-thinking brain, when we feel our brains have gotten trapped in a ping-pong game of right, wrong, good, bad, what should I be doing, what's the best step, and we get paralyzed there, that is one of the downsides of our left-thinking brain, because it's stuck on what's best, and very often there isn't a best. There's just, you try this out, consciously, you make a decision based on the information you have, you see how it goes, and depending on how it goes in the present, then you determine a next step, given everything you know about your history, about the possibility in the future. And so I'd say that's the downside, that our left brain thinking, it can be very judgmental, it can be very prejudiced, it often gets stuck in thinking what experience happened in the past is the only thing that can happen in the future.
Welcome to JBD Team Talks with your host, Karen McMahon. During Team Talks, you get a chance to meet our JBD coaches as we discuss challenges and difficulties that are common to everyone facing divorce and provide you with tips and strategies to help you master the art of managing your thoughts, calming your emotions, and intentionally choosing your responses. And now for today's topic. Welcome back to another episode of JBD Team Talks. Lisa Brick is back with me. Hey, Lise.
Hey, good to be back.
Today, we are talking about, again, You're Not Crazy, Exploring the Contradictory Voices in Your Head, Part 2. So, Lisa, can you quickly let our listeners know what Part 1 was about so that they can go back and listen to that, and then we'll dive right in.
Absolutely. In part one, we discussed how the two different parts of our brain hold actually each two different characters. So we've got four characters in our brain, two in our right hemisphere and two in our left hemisphere. And what's interesting is that the we that we think we are really just a collection of brain cells firing in certain patterns. So, you know, we have this great idea that I am an I, and if some of those cells get knocked out, like they did in the author of the book, you're not the same I anymore. So what makes us who we are is these four sections of our prefrontal cortex and how we use them. So our first show is about that, and about how they think differently and how we can gain power over our lives and over how we navigate divorce by using our brains, understanding our brains, understanding how we think, understanding how the two sections on our right side, this is my left side, on our two left side work, and how two sections on our right side work. And today we're going to introduce you to your four characters. So for our third part of this series, you'll understand how to effectively use all four characters in a brain huddle to lead you to a more peaceful, more effective, more skillful way of living life.
Perfect. That was a perfect encapsulation. So if you're tuning in to this episode and you didn't listen to part one, you really want to go back and listen to part one. It gives you that broader context. And then today, as Lisa said, we're really going to drill down into what are the personalities? What are these four personalities or characters in our head? How are they different? And how can we begin to notice the difference between one and the other? That's what we're going to talk about today. And then our final episode is how do you take all of this information and use it for your better good and a better way of being and engaging and responding to life.
Yeah, and I want to start by saying right off the bat that my characters 3 and 4 are better developed, I think, than my characters 1 and 2. And so it's really difficult for me to put all of this information into a sequential timeline and break it down and make it simple to talk about. And Karen, her 1 and 2 are really, really very advanced. And so together, we make a very good team. And the difference between our right brain and our left brain is one is sequential. It thinks in time. It's easy for it to, to compare one idea to the next, to compare one moment in time to the next moment in time. And it's really very good at that. And our right brain takes in things in images, in holistically, in feelings, and it tends to not be so concerned about differentiation, yet it understands how things feel, and very often it's working to get those feelings and keep those feelings that are exciting, that are enlivening, and that bring a lot of peace and tranquility to ourselves.
Yeah. And I would like to, it's so interesting how all of our brains work differently. So I'm going to describe the same thing in a slightly different way. And having had the benefit of interviewing Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. So left is left linear. Left is about time. The left part of our brain takes into consideration the past, the present, and the future. And she refers to the right as right here, right now. And so I like that. For me, that works very well. Left linear, right here, right now, each have a thinking and a feeling side. And the right here, right now is not only just present, but that's also our connection to all that is. That's the more, that's that larger connectedness to all consciousness. And so that's where we can tap into that higher version, that higher power. So let's just dive in. And one of the things that Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor has recommended we do, which I at first thought was odd and then found to be fun and then found to be fascinating, was to name our characters. And so for those of you listening, I really encourage you as you begin to understand each character to give them a name, because now I'm finding that I know what part of my brain is kind of chatting and upfront at any given time. So Lisa, let's dive into character one, what it is. If you have a name, you can give it. I'm happy to share the names of my characters and, yeah, let's dive in.
Sure. So character one, I first started calling the conductor and it felt too impersonal. So I've renamed her Linnea because she's so linear, beginning and But she is very much the conductor of my life. She's the one that when I wake up in the morning, looks at the phone to see what is on my calendar for the day, organizes my time, and figures out what needs to happen when and what's the best way to do it. So she's like the get things done, get things organized. She's why my kitchen is quite neat. She's why I clean while I cook, or I put my tools away when I'm fixing something as soon as I'm done with them. And let's see. She's actually, without character one, really, we might play, but things are a mess and our lives are very chaotic. Yeah. Care, what do you want to share about character one?
Yes. So
my Linnea.
Yeah, you're Linnea. I named my character Chief because she is the CEO of my life and she really runs things. And I agree with you. I think that for me, the whole concept of being executive functioning, you know, when we talk about the value of executive functioning, that's my chief. She's my executive functioning part of my brain. She's the one who keeps me on track, who helps me to juggle all the balls that I'm juggling, who can delineate from what's urgent versus what's important. Like, she's that critical thinking. In fact, one of the parts of it is critically judges right and wrong, good and bad too. So, you know, there's a yin and a yang to each of our characters. And so I tend to be pretty detail oriented. I'm a spreadsheet junkie. Like, that's all Chief. That's her. That's what blows her skirt up. That's where she's running the show. When there's a lot on my plate and I have to get it all done, she's the one who's really, taking control. She also could be the one who could be tit for tat. I did this, you didn't do that. Like the counting, the comparing. One of the things that Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor said is it's our character one who could delineate. So like, how do I know that my nose is a part of me, but my eyeglasses aren't? Like, that's our character one who has that really brilliant, fine-tuned delineation, which also can be a compare and contrast and judge, like our drudging side of he's wrong, I'm right. That's our character one as well. So mine is Chief, and thank God for Chief, because she keeps my life in pretty good order.
Yeah, it's interesting. The author of the book that we're talking about and the work that we're talking about, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, she knew this intimately because as she had the stroke she had, it knocked out this part of her right brain tissue.
Left brain.
And I'm sorry, her left brain tissue. Mm-hmm. And she no longer knew herself as a self. She was just an experiential sort of, she couldn't talk. Our left brain thinks in language. She didn't have language anymore, but she still existed. So it was very interesting as she healed and she started working with her brain and it began to come back online. All of these things we're talking about for our left brain thinking part, she nurtured it back and she saw little by little how she was getting back her capability.
Yes.
So for us, it's theoretical. For her, she actually got to live through not having characters one and two and then rebuilding them cell by cell. So wasn't it all theoretical for her?
Right. And just to bring up the left linear part too. So it's our main operating system in terms of executive functioning, but it's also that side that is considering everything that's ever happened to us and everything that might happen to us. It's really that linear, that part of our brain that does think that way. And so if you're navigating divorce, you know, there's so many moving pieces and did I make the right decision? And am I hurting my kids? And all of these different things, when we're looking at it from a when we're thinking about it, when we're in our rational mind, it's that left side of our brain that is scanning all of time and putting pieces together and creating our story on the logistical part, right? On the thinking part. Is there anything else that we want to say about left thinking before we go to left feeling?
Yes, I would say with our left thinking brain, when we feel our brains have gotten trapped in a ping pong game of right, wrong, good, bad, what should I be doing? What's the best step? And we get paralyzed there. That is one of the downsides of our left thinking brain, because it's stuck on what's best. And very often there isn't a best. There's just, you try this out consciously, you make a decision based on the information you have, you see how it goes. And depending on how it goes in the present, then you determine a next step, given everything you know about your history, about the possibility in the future. And so I'd say that's the downside, that our left brain thinking, it can be very judgmental. It can be very prejudiced. It often gets stuck in thinking what experience happened in the past is the only thing that can happen in the future, right, instead of really being open to possibility. So it's brilliant. And it's also can be, without the other three characters in our brain, it can be very limiting.
And I would think,
as wonderful she is.
Yes. And I would think that the other thing is, you know, as I've worked with people who have a hard time making decisions, and they've got five choices and they take three choices off the table. Now they're only choosing two, but no, let me put those three choices back on the table. And that whole analytical looping, but maybe, and there's a possibility. And so that seems to me very much residing, not completely, because character two has some play there when it comes to fear, but that indecisiveness is also part of what's happening when your left thinking brain is in control, which is why, as we go through these, you'll see why we often need to call on some of our other characters to come in, enter stage left, and help out.
Going through a divorce is challenging. It involves many issues, legal, financial, emotional, and social, and requires the guidance of a seasoned legal team to achieve optimal outcomes. That's the promise of Laufer Delana Jensen Bradley & Doran. Choosing the right family lawyer could be the most important decision you make in the divorce process. There's life after divorce, and Laufer's team helps you to get there. Providing options to mediate, arbitrate, collaborate, or litigate, the firm handles issues such as alimony, custody, child support, and equitable distribution. Each case is staffed with both a male and female attorney, as their clients benefit from having both gender perspectives on their side, and that distinguishes their firm. You can get your free consultation today by calling 973-285-1444 and mention that you heard about them on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast.
Absolutely. So let's talk a bit about left emotional character too.
Yeah.
So
what's her name, Lisa?
What is her name? Carrie, you go first, because I forgot her name, so I have to call it back.
Okay. So my left emotional. So one of the things we talked about in the first episode is our thinking brain matures, our emotional brain doesn't. And so our emotional brain is always a child. And we have two children in our head. And one is more of our wounded, reactive, emotional child, and the other one is more of our carefree, playful, not thinking, getting into trouble child. And so left feeling, our left emotional child, my name is Stormy. My left emotional child is linear. So my left emotional child is all of ours, are looking at all of time, everything that ever happened that went wrong. This is where my reactivity, this is where my judgment, this is where my resistance, this is where I get angry, where I can blame or accuse. This is where I feel internal shame or guilt. This is negative self-judgment, my inner critic, absolutely housed in my left emotional brain. And so for me, I didn't want to give her any kind of a negative name, because she's my wounded child that I love, and she's there to show me where the wounds still are and where the refinement and healing still needs to be done. And so her name is Stormy because she has a rather stormy way of being. And we want to love that part of ourselves, and yet also use the experience of our left emotional brain to notice where we have wounds that need to be healed and where we need to be soothed, where we need to be able to self-soothe and say, yeah, it makes sense that you're scared given everything that happened. Your reaction makes so much sense, but then we have one of our other characters come in to kind of balance out Stormy's reaction to things.
Well, I still don't have a name, so I'm going to go without it. But Karen said something about wounds, and wounds usually lead to pain. And something beautiful about character too, as stormy as she could be for any of us, is that our wounds are the edge of where we can grow. It's so we could say, character two is very, very helpful, our left brain character two, because she's trying to protect us from the past. She's also very, very limited, zero possibility. She gets stuck in a loop of what's wrong. She's looking for whose fault it was. I'm going to refer to it because these really don't have a gender to them. Or maybe I should call them they, but at this point. But so there's value there, and we can determine where we need to grow, where the edge of our growth is, and we can go further. When I think of my character too, I see a lot of pain. I see a lot of what's a threat, what can go wrong, what's painful. And I personally have to consistently remind myself, what do I want? You know, so I switch out of character too as quickly as possible. Because one of the things about our neural circuits is the more we run them, the faster they get.
And stronger.
And the stronger they get. So the more we go over what's wrong, what's bad, who did what, who's to blame, the more we live there. And during divorce, it's particularly important to honor our pain, but not get stuck in the repetition of who did what and how I hurt and every time this happened, because what we'll do is we'll be perpetually stuck in a pain loop.
Right. And I think go ahead.
The more we're in it, the easier it gets to get in it and stay in it. And then we can't think clearly. Our character one gets bumped out of the way because it becomes very hard to be strategic when we're in our fury or our sadness about what happened.
And you know what I think is interesting? I am having a hard time naming my character three. You're having a hard time naming your character two. And I think we've talked about this in the first episode, and you mentioned it in the beginning of this one. our characters may not all be equally developed. Often they're not. And so I'll have clients, and actually I have some friends and loved ones who are like, well, that's just the way I am. I'm just being human. And one of the brilliant things about this book, Whole Brain Living, is we're bigger than that. And so while you may find that your character too, the way Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor says it, is who's holding the mic, who's the one in your head talking. So while your character too may be running the show and holding the mic, that is not who you are. That is one part of you. That is the inner child. I've done a lot of inner child work. When I look at character two, it's like, I know my character two really well. And I've worked really hard on both acknowledging and loving and validating her, and also quieting her down so that I can present better in any circumstance that I'm in. And anytime we're triggered or upset, our character too is going to have something to say. And when we can notice it, when I know that Stormy's taken over, then it's an opportunity for me to both acknowledge and validate whatever hurt is in there, and also then to make sure to hand the mic to one of my other characters who might be significantly more effective in engaging in whatever the situation is. And so if you can't name a character, for me, that was one of the huge ahas in reading this book, and we'll get to character three in a minute, but I was like, I am not that well acquainted. I knew 1, 2, and 4 very well. I was like, I know them. I can name them. I have a sense of them. I love that I could start seeing them separately. But my character three, not so much. And so as we're talking, it would make sense if you're listening and going, it's not really resonating with me. I don't really know. But if you say, I don't have that character, that's not true. We all have all four characters. And this is a great opportunity to start developing a part of ourselves that we may not be that familiar and acquainted with.
Good point. Another thing about character two, which we're talking about how character two can be constricted and rigid and cautious and fear-based and really stern and doubtful, and character two can be a bully when the emotions are going out full. Character two can be righteous and manipulative. Character two likes to stick to the tried and true. And that one is really interesting because whatever was familiar to us in our past feels safe. Even though safe may not be the right word for it. When I say that, people who have gotten into abusive relationships, very often they have a tolerance for being insulted or undermined or even physically hit because they experienced it growing up. And so I'm not going to say it's safe, but it's familiar. And the character too inside each of us, if that's familiar, then they're pretty competent in dealing with it. So they're pretty comfortable with it. And in most cases, they've enrolled character one to make excuses. That's just how people are. I remember I'm a licensed acupuncturist, and I had a client a long time ago, and I noticed she had bruises on her body. And one time I asked her about it. And long story short, she told me that she and her boyfriend fight, and they it's physical, and then they make up. They've got great makeup lovemaking, and that's how all relationships are, aren't they? And I said, why would you think that? And she said, well, that's how my parents' relationships are, and that's how his parents' relationships are. And really, until I absorbed this book, I was just so confused by that thinking. And now that I've read about character two and understand that this patient, she knew what to do with this kind of relationship. So even though she was getting hurt, it was a safe hurt. It was actually safer than if she got involved with somebody who, when she got angry and wanted to fight, wouldn't fight with her.
That would be uncomfortable.
And on top of it, that would not only be uncomfortable, but in her rationale, she had said to me, well, if somebody doesn't get angry enough to hit you, it means they don't love you.
Ah.
So this is where our character ones and our character twos can keep us really, really trapped in cycles that are not the best for us or for our children.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is. And that's just the way it is until we learn how to bring in characters three and four and do this thing called the brain huddle that we're going to talk to you about in show three.
Yes.
And none of this is inevitable. None of it. Once you're conscious of it, the real beauty of this work is nothing, no way that you react is inevitable anymore, because you can stop reacting and you can start responding in the moment to the situations you find yourself out of what you want instead of what you're used to or what you're comfortable with. And so it's incredibly powerful work.
Yeah. And becoming acquainted with the right side of our brain, which has that more connected, more conscious, more present capability, it's a game changer. And so, so here we've got the racket that's running on the left-hand side and the very productive things that the left side of the brain does as well, both thinking and feeling. And then let's cross over to right here, right now, the right side. And let's start with the right emotional, which is character three, who I feel a little bit less acquainted with. Although what was so cool was I was talking to Lisa about it, and she was helping me to see parts of my character three that I couldn't on my own. And I share that to say that this is complex. This is a new paradigm, a new concept. And so it takes some time to connect with and to understand. And yet Lisa and I have found it just absolutely brilliant as scientific backup to so much of the work that we do with our clients and so much of the conversations that we have with you listeners.
So let's switch it up a little. And Kara, I want to hear your loose description of character, right emotional character three, after I point one thing out. And that thing is characters one and two, left brain, they're all about the ego. They're all about me. What happened to me, my life, protecting my things, my family. And as Karen will begin to share, characters three, right emotional character three, and right thinking character four, they're not so concerned about the individual me at all. They're more in the moment of the experience, or the, I'll call it the collective we. Yes. So Kara, take it away for right brain emotional character three.
So one of the things we want to keep in mind is our emotional brains are our children, our inner child. And so just as our left emotional is linear and looking at everything that happened and there to protect us and everything that we described, what does that leave the right emotional? And what's so cool about the right emotional is it's our innocent child. It is our playful side. It is walking through nature and being just absolutely awestruck by the butterfly, by the way the blades of grass are flowing in the wind. It's it's our deep empathy for others. It's our connectedness to when you see someone that you know or you don't know who's struggling, and you just have this huge, overwhelming sense of empathy for them. That is our character three emotional. It is our creativity. If those of you, you know, I love podcasting and writing. I have sisters who are artists. I have a daughter who's an artist. So everybody has this creative side of themselves, and that's our character three. It is our joyful. One of the things that I remember as I was reading character three was driving in the car with my son. He was driving me to the airport, and like four of his friends was squeezed into the backseat. They were all like 17, 18 years old, big boys. 40 minutes, they laughed and laughed. I laughed more in that 40 minutes than I probably had in the previous 40 days. And so our character three is that part of us that's just so playful and joyful and curious and who wants to experience things. When I think about character three, I actually often think about my son, who's a little impulsive because character three isn't thinking, right? So it's like he took a sled once and decided to go down two stories of the Long Island Railroad steps because it had snowed. The fact that there was a brick wall 6 feet beyond the bottom step, like, just never really occurred to him. It was like, it was fun. It was exciting. It was like, and that's our character three. Our character three is experiential, and our character three can get us into trouble. Our character three can be acting or being impulsive without thinking, and because it's not our thinking brain. So my character three, Lisa was kind enough to point out that, like, my joy of bike riding, I have a puppy. Most of you know, because I've mentioned her, that Izzy and playing with Izzy and being out and about in the world with her is part of my joy. And for me, I think that as a single parent for 20 plus years and running my own business, I lean more toward the business of life. And so one of the things this book has done for me is really kind of opened an invitation for me to find and reside in that playful part of myself more often.
Nice. Very nice. And, you know, Karen pointed out about the teenage years and how it can be so character three driven. And it often gets drummed out of us because we're told we're not responsible enough. And in some cases, character three is not responsible at all. It's friends getting together and deciding to get drunk and then really excitedly say, okay, let's go get food. I'll drive. You know, I'm like two sheets to the wind. And yet, you know, if character three is only in charge, I might get behind the wheel and drive, which happens with a lot of teenagers. There's a more innocent character three when we're children that's just dilly-dallying because they're watching an aunt go across the floor and mom or dad's behind them or teacher's behind them saying, come on, we've things to do. We've got to get out of here. Stop that. You know, that aunt doesn't mean anything. Forget about it. As a matter of fact, they go over and they step on it.
Right.
You know, and our character three can be like aghast and starts crying and like, stop that. It's just an ant. So there's a lot of character three that gets squashed as powerfully as that ant does while we're growing up. And as Karen mentioned, character three, if not balanced by left brain character one, can be dangerous. Dr. Bolte Taylor said that a lot of people in prison are in prison because their character three went from, hey, let's get together, let's go for a joyride, to let's get drunk, to like, oh man, I saw this great stereo in the store, but the store's closed now. Oh, come on, let's break in. And it's all in this like momentary excitement without thinking of any consequences whatsoever. So that can be the sort of danger of a an unleashed character three without balance. But then character three can also be, I'm working in the house and I realize I need to get up and go outside. And I go outside and I feel the sun on my skin or the rain on my skin. And I hear the Canadian geese going above. And I just, my brain stops and I look up. And between the sound of the geese and the feeling of the sun on my skin, it's like nirvana for a second.
Yeah.
Or when I go in the garden. Or, you know, I might be in the midst of something and the phone rings and I see it's my son calling or my daughter calling. And I just get this sense of joy that comes upon me in the moment. And everything else is like, oh, whoa, I'm going to speak to Noe or Luke. And it's a pure joy. I can go into the garden and get lost out there. I'm not listening to podcasts. I'm not thinking. I'm just sort of in the dirt. And yeah, I'm using character one because I'm probably planting or weeding. But the experience, I'm just fully engaged. There is no time. And it isn't about how much I get done. It's the pure joy of doing. As Karen said, artists get lost in there. Musicians get lost in there. Athletes at the top of the game, when they forget about performance and are just purely performing, they are firmly in the midst of their character three. And it's a great, it's very important. I won't even call it a respite. It's a recharger. It's a place where our entire brain can go and just recharge our joy of being alive and what we can do in bodies on this planet in play. Even if what we're doing is so-called serious, we can still be playful and engaged in the moment.
Are you emotionally overwhelmed, heartbroken, bitter, paralyzed by fear? In order to effectively navigate the significant decisions before you and skillfully master your life after divorce, you must attend to your emotional recovery. Our 12-step divorce recovery program is an emotional roadmap that guides you to feel clearer, stronger, and more in charge of yourself. Thousands have emerged transformed by the lessons, strategies, and tools our roadmap provides. Divorce will change your life. Enroll in the 12-step divorce recovery program today and ensure that the changes will be life-enhancing. Go to divorcerecoveryprogram.com to enroll.
It isn't about me and I. It's about the experience. It's almost, even though I'm enjoying the pleasure of the sun on my skin, I'm just lost in the feeling with the sun.
Yeah.
Not, it's my skin, it's my pleasure.
Right.
So I hope that helps explain character three. And
I want to just add something, because as you were talking, I was thinking of, so here we have our audience. We're also, our other parallel series is Life After Divorce, and we're starting to talk about dating. And when you think about falling in love, right? And it's like time disappears and you're so connected and you're so happy and everything, your right emotional brain is so charged up, the sensuality, the sexuality, the joy of just being, the fun and delight of just spending time with this new exciting person. That's very deeply rooted in our character three.
Yeah. Which is why it's so absolutely pleasurable and beyond time and space.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm thinking about where character three can come into during divorce. That's a tricky one. And I'm running by experiences I've heard from my clients. Kara, can you think of any times that character three played, was able to come out and shine during the heated time of divorce?
I would say the one thing that immediately comes to mind, and I'm really kind of going back to my own divorce experience, was the yin and the yang of going through a divorce with young children. And so it was really my deep desire to support my kids when they were going through such a hard time that I found myself on the swing set with Dominique, completely enjoying that. I found myself skipping rocks with Christopher. We would have date night. I'd spend like an hour with each of my kids once a week. And it was actually, I needed my kids, almost as an invitation to bring my character three to the surface.
Your innocent child.
Yeah, because we're not walking around vulnerable. We're walking around guarded. We've got a gazillion things on our mind. We're overwhelmed. So one and two are like all ramped up. And so for me, the thought was that my character three would come out while engaging with my children. And the other place my character three came out, and you know, I'll say this in the context of I wanted the divorce. And so for me, when I saw a light at the end of the tunnel and I could start imagining my life with the whole divorce battle behind me and where I'm going to live and what I'm going to do and what it's going to be like, while character two had plenty to say, the fear emotion, the left emotional, my character three, I think, and the delight and the possibility and even getting the new place and setting it up and, you know, picking colors and bedding for the children. I think all of that was part of where I saw my character three.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because it's stimulating in me memories of, you know, at least two clients and where they've shared their character three. One is if you've been in an abusive relationship and you get out of it and you're in your own home now, that walking into that home and realizing that it's peaceful in there, that also is an experience. And clients have told me, I'm so glad I got out, because as much as what I have is going on, and as much as I don't know what the future is going to be, in the present, when I open that door and this home is the way I choose it to be, and I can open all the shades and have all the light and have the windows open, and if I want to, I can go over and turn the radio up and dance in my own kitchen and not be worried about somebody saying it's too noisy or it's too bright in here. That is another place that I've had clients experience their character three, as well as you said, when they can just put character two on pause and be with their kids without just dropping their concerns about the future and just be in the present with the children, then, and I think that for all people, children provide this window back to our character threes that have generally been stomped on or weren't really able to be developed very well.
Yeah.
There's also another aspect to character three I want to point out. That's if we're stuck in a character two and our soon to be ex has a character three aspect, we can be very, very judgmental about that character three, saying that they're irresponsible, they've never grown up, I guess those are the two biggest things, and they should be doing, there's character one in there, they should be doing differently. They should be helping me with my needs. And this isn't just divorce. This could be in a marriage too, particularly after you've had your second child and parenting doesn't seem to be quite manageable the same way with just one primary parenting. I think it's very important to recognize, you know, where's my character three, and beginning to, if your spouse or soon to be ex is not available to allow your character three to come out, or if their character three is coming out and you feel overwhelmed, to find support and resource elsewhere. So not just get stuck in the duality that it's only my spouse who's supposed to be doing this, because actually your spouse needs a certain amount of character three time the same way you do. So, and if you're not experiencing your character three enough, then you get someone other than the spouse to give you some breathing room so you can space out and be in the present and just be playful and open to experience.
You know, what I love about this conversation is, and I said in the beginning that I feel like my character three can be more developed. Sometimes if I'm a worker bee, I'm going to fall in love with somebody who's got a strong character three, because I don't. And so that person's going to pull me into my playfulness and my innocence and my lightheartedness. And, you know, what we are attracted to and marry is what ends up irritating the heck out of us, and we criticize. And so, I mean, how often I've heard of someone where, you know, he or she was great and terrific, but then, you know, we got married and we had kids and they were still like off being character three, and there was business to be had. And so the thing that I love about this is how it gives us opportunity to see each person as this holistic individual. And when we know that, we can then have a different kind of conversation, and it's not a grow up and get responsible and be serious. It's a conversation. And this is where character four comes in, which we'll get to. Yeah. It's a conversation about, you know, what do you need? And how can we make sure you get your needs met? Because that's how you're wired. You have a really strong character three. And yet there's also these other things that as a partnership we need to accomplish. And so you just, when you understand, and I'm kind of describing the outcome of using the tool, which comes in our next episode, but when you understand all four characters, you have agency to slow things down, understand that interplay that's going on, and actually engage in a way that's so different than how many of us have engaged in the past.
You know, as you're talking, I'm realizing the lack of a character three, for whatever reason, for illness or responsibilities, I think it leads to a considerable amount of what we see in gray divorce. Because if that character three is not, if it's not manifesting, very often the person who we married or the person who married us begins to see life as dull and a constant sense of responsibility, and it's just no fun anymore. And they might be asking for fun, and either the spouse is saying, look, I'm just too busy. I'm stuck between the kids and the business and my parents, and I don't have time for this. And I think there's a danger when we allow our character threes to atrophy, because almost everybody that I've spoken to with gray divorce recognized while they were comfortable in the life they were living before somebody filed, their spouse filed for divorce, or where they realized they had to file for divorce because they felt like they were dying inside.
Right.
Those feelings, I think, as we're talking about this, and I'm really thinking it for the first time, I think a lot of that might come from the neglect of our character threes. Life stops being fun.
Well, and when you think about it, so many of the clients that we've worked with, it's like, when did you stop going out on a date on a regular basis with your spouse? And of course, you know, chances are, foreplay, waking up and, you know, hugging your spouse or holding hands, or like the day long foreplay, like that's not there. Sex isn't there. Sensuality isn't there. Like all of these things that reside in character three,
character three,
your point, do atrophy. And then we think that this is who we are. And the beauty of this book is, we're very holistic and we're all parts, and we are at our best when we are familiar with and allow for all parts of our brain, all four characters to be alive and doing their job and to have incredible love and empathy for every part of them, every part of us.
And I'd say, as unrealistic as it might sound, character three is for when you're traversing divorce, start thinking of your character three as either your heart or your lungs that need exercising to keep you well. You know, look for the littlest ways. Maybe it's really turning off the radio or the TV, and if you're having a glass of wine at the end of the day, just losing yourself in the color of the wine through the light, the temperature of the wine on your tongue, the taste of the wine exploding in your mouth. You know, don't just drink the wine to relax, but slow down enough to allow your character three to luxuriate in the experience of having your wine, or luxuriate in the experience of maybe putting down the paperwork you need to get done within 2 days or even within 4 hours, and just step outside and feel the sun on your skin or the wind in your hair. You know, allow yourself these little intimate experiences of aliveness. It'll make everything else easier.
And again, that right brain, that's presence and that's connectedness to a larger consciousness. And so that is, we need that. That's such a vital part of us. And I am committed to getting to know and enhance my character three more. That's actually probably one of my biggest takeaways from the book. Mm-hmm. So let's go into character four before we wrap up. Character four, Lisa, do you want to start with character four? And I'm curious if you have a name for her.
Oh, I do, but I forgot what it is. Oh, Grace. No, I'm sorry. I remember Grace, because it really resonates, because character four is ultimately, it's the experience of grace for me. Mm-hmm. It's the experience of oneness, of wholeness. It's not even aware that there's an I, and it's not even particularly aware that there's a we. It's a feeling of being at home and a part, an integral part of the universe. I would say it's our divine consciousness aspect.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
It's a trusting, it's our trusting, it's our knowing, it's our presence, it's our doing things for a higher purpose, connecting to a higher power, like that's all happening in our right thinking.
And Kara, I want to ask you, is it doing things for a higher purpose or just doing things? It's almost not a for, it's out of the connection to the higher purpose, because I don't see it as I'm doing this for.
No, that it's would more be like, right. That would be
yeah, one. It's emerging from me. It was interesting. I when I came back from India, I was in India for just about 5 weeks, and the trip back, it's a nine and a half hour time difference. And for a week, I say that my body's here, but my brain isn't yet. And so to help me ground, I started meditating again because I had let meditation go. And as I was meditating the other day, it just arose to me in India at other times. I have been in temples where there was a mountain of carved Buddhas. And there must have been thousands of them, and you could sit on this mountain. It's not actually a mountain, but it's in a temple, and it's a high platform with, as I said, thousands of individual Buddhas carved. And I got this image. I didn't try to bring it up. It just came. And I began to project that image up into the sky in the Ukraine. And on the sides of the roads in Ukraine and in the basements where people are hiding in the Ukraine and in front of the Russian soldiers in the Ukraine. And in reality, physically, I can't do Bubkiss to help other than, you know, donate money for the cause. But that image, it just arose out of a universal love for all of the people who are suffering. And I think it was out of my character four that I slipped right into just projecting these, you know, millions of peaceful Buddhas, trillions, like an infinite amount of peaceful Buddhas. And then my alarm rang and the meditation was over. But I have to say that It's that aspect of right thinking, character four, that ultimately I think also will, when we're doing a brain huddle, which we will speak about more in the third part of this, I think it's that universal consciousness that we tap into when we say, what outcome do we want out of this situation we're in? And we wrap it up like for my kids, for my sense of joy and just peace, tranquility in life. I think that is where we use our thinking brain character for right brain, because it's not about what's the most I can get out of this for me, which ultimately isn't going to make your life as joyful as what can I aim for? What's my purpose here that really brings the greatest health and well-being to all of us who are involved? Because that's what's going to bring me my greatest amount of tranquility inside and joy as we right now and in all of the right nows that are in front of us. Absolutely. And we never know how many right nows are in front of us. You know, our lives can be another 50 years or they can be over tomorrow from some freak accident. So using our right brain, a right thinking brain, allows us to create possibility in the present moment that has the biggest, I'm going to say bang for the buck, the biggest prize the biggest benefit. Kara, how about your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I want to just, I agree with everything you said. Some of the words that Dr. Bolte Taylor uses to describe character four, right? So we know that it's right here, right now. So it's in the present and it's connected to all consciousness. And so our awareness, expansiveness comes from character four, connection comes from character four, acceptance, embracing change. All of you going through divorce, that's our character four, is loving and celebrating what's here right now, and the moment to moment changes, like being with our authenticity comes from our character four, our generosity of spirit, our clarity of mind. And as Lee said earlier, our intention, being intentional in our lives on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, day-to-day basis is a character four trait. And our vulnerability, letting that guard down and being vulnerable and being open. And so, you know, character four is so... such a vital part of us, and going through divorce where there's a lot of chaos, where there's conflict, no matter how high or low conflict your divorce is, our character too is just like primed to grab the mic and take over. And character two, again, being that left emotional, and our right thinking character four is really, you know, I think of like that Zen, Buddha, namaste. How is this a win-win? Where's the opportunity in this? That's our character four. And the more we can develop and invite character four into the conversation and the situation, the more likely we're going to move in the direction that we want to be going in.
Yeah, beautifully said. Really beautifully said. And each of our characters is important. It's not like one is better than the other, but there are characters that when they so-called grab the mic, there are characters that will have a more beneficial outcome than others. When you're going through divorce, there are so many situations that push buttons about fairness, about safety, about survival, about fear of loneliness, of not enough money, of losing the children, losing their love, of being alone the rest of your life. You know, they're all future fears and very, very powerful. And so when character two has the mic by herself, it's a pretty dismal and painful journey. We did a show, it was a team talk recently, on faith and fear in going through divorce. And I'm realizing as we talk about this, and now I have Jill Bolte Taylor's explanation of these four characters in our brain, that show was primarily about, you know, whether we're going to go with character two or whether we're going to go with character four, informed by an expansive character one.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting after you listen to these two parts, or maybe even the third part, to go back and listen to the show on fear and faith in divorce, to see how it works in the wild, you know, in our lives.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up, first, I want to say that what Lisa and I have discussed barely scratches the surface of what is in this book. So if you're fascinated by it, if you're interested, it's Whole Brain Living by Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. She did an interview with me, which you can find in our podcast. Roadmap to Peace is the name of it. And also in the book, which we're not going to get into, she goes into great detail about our four characters in and our body. So how we deal with medical and physical things, our four characters in romantic relationship, our four characters in addiction and recovery. Mm-hmm. And so the next episode, with all of this information, she wanted to make sure that there was a takeaway. And so she has a tool called the Brain Huddle and how we use all of this information for our best good. And so that's what Lisa and I are going to be talking about in the third and final part of this series. If you're interested, journeybeyonddivorce.com/wholebrainliving is a landing page that you can go to and sign up. We're inviting Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor back to speak to all of our listeners who are buying the book and doing the work and kind of engage in more of the finesse of it down the road a piece. And so if this is interesting to you, buy the book, read the book, join our Facebook group, Journey Beyond Divorce Community, ask questions there, engage. And when we have a date, we'll take everyone who signed up on that landing page, journeybeyonddivorce.com/wholebrainliving, and we'll invite you to this special event with the author of the book. And I think that will be brilliant.
Before we sign off completely, and do come to that, I'm looking forward to it very much. Karen mentioned addiction. And one of the things Dr. Taylor says in the book is there's only one type of brain tissue that is able to experience addiction. And it's the part of our brain where our character, our left brain character two resides. And when we think about addiction, it could be to drugs or alcohol. It could be to being miserable. We don't think of that, but you know, drama and the terror of our divorce over and over and over again. What happened? That's an addiction. Shopping is an addiction. And so this information is so, 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 so valuable, because if you figure there's only one cluster of brain tissue that is where addiction resides. And if we can switch out into the other three distinct tissue types in our brain, neural tissue types, it makes transferring our attention from what we're addicted to outside of addiction completely, it will make it easier. So it's powerful in so many ways. And I guess it's time to say goodbye.
It is. So we'll be back with our final show in this mini series. And until then, you take care. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women throughout one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.